God, oh God, oh God, it's here. It's my big chance. The intro animation has just ended and it's down to me, John Iadarola, to give the official TYT rebuttal. Okay, get it together, get it together. If you nail this, you could be the vice president. Drop it. Welcome one and all to the power panel on TYT. I'm John Iadarola, but much more importantly, Francesca Fiorentini, Maz Jobrani, both of you, welcome to the show.
Thank you. That was incredible, John. I mean, it could have been a little breathier.
I know.
But it was really good.
No, but I do have to be, look, it's either because I'm that much of a method actor or that I really need to do more cardio. I'm kind of out of breath from that, actually. I understand how she was feeling, is all I'm saying. Maz, how have you been?
I have been well, and I enjoy watching people try to perform like she was, and it's always fun. You know, the people who are on stage and in front of audiences, I think after a while we think like, oh, everybody can do it. And then when you see somebody who's doing like bad acting,
yeah,
you go, okay, not everybody can do it. So mm-hmm. It kind of makes you feel pretty good. I mean, it was a little bit of Schadenfreude. I mean, I felt bad for her, but it was just nice mm-hmm. to see her be like, you know,
yeah,
the country is falling apart. You know, just like the way she was, it was fantastic.
Yeah. What I enjoy is you take a whole bunch of different policies and positions, some of them serious, some of them not. And then you take a whole bunch of emotional states and then you just combine them totally at random. No yes. connection between the topic and the emotional state. But anyway, why are we getting ahead of ourselves? We're gonna clearly be talking about that coming up on the show once I get my breath. But not just that, breaking news, Lara Trump finally got the job that she has been working towards her whole life and has been accruing all of the experience one needs to serve as the head of the RNC. We'll have that for you. Legal updates on Donald Trump and more. What is a passport, bro? Stay tuned and we might get to it. But with all that said, those of you watching live, thank you for being here. We got a great hour planned for you, a great second hour as well. Please hit that like button. And with no more ado, let's jump into this.
Y'all, you can't make this stuff up. Look, we all recall when presidents faced national security threats with strength and resolve. That seems like ancient history. Right now, our commander-in-chief is not in command. The free world deserves better than a dithering and diminished leader.
Dear God, it was like some ancient witch started to take over her soul as that went on. Whew, okay, that's Katie Britt giving the official response to the State of the Union. And as you could, I'm thinking, clearly tell from that video, she was chosen for a couple of reasons. One, she's a big up and comer in the party with vice presidential aspirations. And two, she can go from folksy smile to boring a hole through your skull with her eyes in about 2 to 3 seconds. But anyway, there's more, including way more different emotional states. Take a look.
I never could have imagined what my story would entail. To think about what the American dream can do. Mr. President, enough is enough. Innocent Americans are dying and you only have yourself to blame. It's been a minute since Joe Biden pumped gas, ran a carpool, or even pushed a grocery cart. We hear you. And we stand with you. I know you're frustrated.
Look, there's a lot going on there. And honestly, I'm gonna say that watching that, I don't think I should do that. I have the weird lib thing where I naturally try to empathize with the people that I see, and I have a sort of mirroring of their emotions, and that is just too much of a roller coaster ride. Why is she winking? Why is she talking like this all of a sudden? Why are you standing with me so weirdly close to me? Look, there's clearly a lot going on and I'm not a huge fan, although it was fun, I guess, for a while. Republicans also not huge fans, and we're gonna get to some of their criticism of that rebuttal. But first, Francesca, I saw some of your like live reaction to it with your husband on Instagram. Yes. What do you make of it now with a little bit of time, you know?
It doesn't age well upon third viewing. It is still just as, what are you trying to do? Who is this for? Why are you in a kitchen that doesn't feel like a real kitchen? Like again, I don't know if she is trying to break off from the Moms for Liberty group and start a new group. I don't know if she's actually a sitting senator. I don't know if she is like doing an acting course, and this is her very first monologue, and she's trying to crush it. Like, there are a million things, but like this like very fragile state of I'm about to cry, I'm about to laugh, but mostly I'm psychotic, and this is my parking space. Like, this is the most, to quote Dr. Ritchie, the Karenicity on the brink of a breakdown that I've seen. And I guess that's what you want out of a political party.
It looked like a commercial for an antidepressant medication.
100%.
Right? Like, you know, are you feeling, you know, traumatized and desperate and alone and you don't know what to do? Mr. President, I want you to help me. I'm going to take my pills and feel better or whatever the pill is. Don't they audition these people? Like, this is the, this was your chance to put your bulldog, your pit bulls, your Marjorie Taylor Greens, your Lauren Boebers, your Jim Jordans, who are just as nutty. This is your chance to put one of those screamers in front of the audience and just have them scream and be like, you know, at least you'd be like, you know, at least Republicans would be like, that's what I'm talking about. Versus this poor lady. I mean, it's just, it was so bad. It was sad. And by the way, if you look at all the policies and all these things that they blame him for, all you got to do, If they come at you with any of this stuff, all you got to do is go, look, there was a border bill that you guys tanked. So you're talking about all this stuff. You tanked the border bill. So don't be blaming Joe when you weren't able to pass something that was going to solve 90% of these problems that you're talking about, or at least start to solve these problems. So, even on the actual policies, it was totally empty.
Yeah, 100%. And you said, you know, don't they audition people? What I was wondering is, like, I just imagine her, like, she's prepped at home. She sits down. She's like, should we do a run through? And like the stage manager's like, no, you got it. Whatever. Like, no, you gotta do a run through. Like, or have someone in your ears like, this is all super weird, all the stuff you're doing. Could you please stop doing? You're making Mark Zuckerberg look like a human, okay? Like, just imitate people you've seen on TV. And look, I said that we're gonna get to the Republican reactions, and we are. But before we do that, I wanna show you one more video. This is not from her rebuttal. This is like a social media clip to promote her rebuttal. And I want you to take a look at the stark difference in this.
Hey y'all, Katie Britt here. I am looking forward to delivering the Republican response to the State of the Union. So tune in, see you soon.
That's a human in that video. That is a person who's just talking. She's not wildly swinging from one extreme to another. She's not like desperately trying to give some sort of weird version of gravitas or seriousness about the border. She's just talking like a person. And deep down inside, I'm sure there is a person. But unfortunately, she has ambitions and she has aspirations. And this is what the political system does to people. It turns them into these bizarre robots. So anyway, look, we've all been critical, but it's not just us. Charlie Kirk said, I'm sure she's a sweet mom in person, but this speech is not what we need. Joe Biden just declared war on the American right, and Katie Britt is talking like she's hosting a cooking show, whispering about how Democrats don't get it. There were a lot of anonymous responses reaching out to different news sites. One Trump advisor said, what the hell am I watching right now? Creepy, a Republican pollster said. One lawyer working in the Trump orbit said that the performance reminded them of public access television. A senior House congressional aide on the Republican side remarked that it was cringe inducing and likely destined to be turned into a lame SNL skit. I just want to know who is going to be playing her on that.
Or can they beat her? Like, who can do it better than she can?
It might not. One Republican staffer said it gives a high school freshman speech. She really thinks she's killing it, but it's comical, like SNL quality. First of all, people love to just crap all over SNL. Some of the skits are good. Anyway, radio host Jesse Kelly wrote that it's not what he'd prefer out of the GOP response. quote, but there's no question Katie Britt has mastered the ultimate weapon of dimes everywhere. The fake cry, that's a seasoned pro right there. So that's not great either as a take, but there was one person who liked it, or at least is pretending to like it on social media. He said online, Katie Britt was a great contrast to a capital A angry and obviously very disturbed president. She was compassionate and caring, especially concerning women and women's issues. Her conversation on migrant crime was powerful and insightful. Great job, Katie. And it's pretty clear from that why she was chosen or what her mission was supposed to be. Bearing in mind that Donald Trump wanted to be the one to give the rebuttal himself. They said not to have that. They're putting her in instead. She's under consideration to be VP. They clearly think that they can like win over women or something. And some of them are not even as nuanced in talking about that mission as Donald Trump. Tommy Tuberville said, like he was a little bit critical of it, but he said she wasn't really there to be a senator. She was there to be a mom, like a housewife or whatever. So that's what she's doing. She's a senator. She's been a lawyer for years and years. She was a comms director for the previous senator. She's not a housewife. Housewives are real things. You could have a housewife if you wanted them to deliver the rebuttal. She is a professional working woman who's worked for many, many years. So either he knows that, in which case he knows that the mission is for her to like cosplay being a housewife or something, or he doesn't know that and screw her many years of both public service and private service. She's always just gonna be a housewife to him and to the other Republicans. I don't know exactly which it is. Francesca, what do you think?
Well, I mean, that's the irony of the entire thing is that she herself, I mean, she's part of where she's going to be delivering this rebuttal. And she was in, I guess, her kitchen. It kind of seems like a set, but she was there. I mean, that was a choice to say, I just look like a regular old lady who's selling you or mom who's, yeah, selling you some antacids, you know, and, you know, for your problem of border migrants, you know, like coming across. And like she said the word rape like five times in the first 5 minutes. Like, it's just ridiculous. So again, like, and this is my broader point about Republican women in this party, that even though she is an accomplished senator, I guess, in her own right, that part of her selling the Republican Party is selling the second class citizenship or the sort of housebound housewife identity of women. She's from Alabama at the same time that Alabaman lawmakers are taking away the right to have a family via IVF, yeah, because the right of a zygote is more important, right? She didn't talk anything about that. Speaking of, you know, talking about the crime on the border, what about the crimes being committed against women in this very country? So we'll see if this is enough to get suburban women, a lot of whom are losing the thread on the Republicans because of abortion rights. But it's just, again, it's a pretty sick way to sell this case to women.
Yeah, I would say, you know, John, the clip you showed of her promoting the upcoming rebuttal, based on that, if I were coaching her, I would say, listen, let's not, because it looks like she was probably reading from a teleprompter, and that makes you even more nervous, and she's got to hit everything. And she might even had in parentheses, like, cry, smile. You know, there might have been, it might have been that etched out. And if I were directing her, I'd say, listen, let's just do bullet points. Hit the point, move on to the next bullet point, hit the point, because it was just they put her out there to really fail. And to Francesca's point with women in the Republican Party, and they're trying to win over women by saying, oh, look, a woman gave a rebuttal. The truth is, you know, I was looking at Nikki Haley not being chosen to be the nominee on the Republican side. Yes, number one, she was battling MAGA and Trump. But number two, and I think just as important, if not maybe more important, is MAGA Republicans and maybe Republicans in general would never vote for a woman to be president. So you might sit there and put as many women as you want to do the rebuttals, but they see you as a second class citizen. They're not gonna accept you. You're not a leader. You need to be in the kitchen. You're a housewife. The same way they try to play with people of color when Donald Trump photoshops black people around him, they would never vote for a black person to be their nominee. It's not gonna happen. It ain't gonna happen. And so you can do as much as you want to say, oh, we welcome everybody, but they don't and they won't. And if you're a sucker, you're enough of a sucker to vote for them, then you lose.
Yeah. And look, the idea that if you want to be an elected Republican, as a lot of different people of different sorts want to be, but unfortunately, there's not a lot of different Republican parties. There's one, and it's misogynistic and racist and Islamophobic and homophobic and all of those things. But some people who are part of those groups that most Republicans have no respect for are conservative. So they're put in this really uncomfortable situation. And I have some empathy for that situation. But Katie Britt is obviously a willing tool in continuing all of those hierarchies, not only in being a senator or giving the rebuttal. She wants to be Trump's VP, never forget that. And that's where I'm gonna set aside the jokes for just a second, because it's easy to make fun of her and it feels good and I'm glad that we did it. But she's also a senator and a truly horrible, dishonest person. And that's where the stuff that she said in that gets kind of serious, because she went on at length about human traffickers raping women. And she said all of that to attack Joe Biden. She went on at length about gang rapes of women and how horrific it is, so that Joe Biden would lose to the guy she wants to win, Donald Trump, who a judge found was a rapist. Okay? So she loves to use the idea of rape as a political weapon, as she is supporting a rapist for office. And by the way, I want to just mention something that I saw Shannon Watts mention on Twitter, which is in that absolutely horrific example that you gave, Katie Britt, of a woman being gang raped by human traffickers, an unthinkable tragedy. Let's say she gets pregnant during that. What should happen to her, Katie Britt? I think we all know what you think should happen. She should raise the baby of one of those rapists for literally decades. That's what you think should happen. And small fact check, Francesca, you mentioned that she didn't mention IVF. In her speech, she did briefly mention IVF, and she said that they would support it. But when I heard that, I had just listened to Joe Biden's speech. And when he mentioned them enshrining IVF rights, no Republican clapped, no Republican stood up. And it was just a few days ago that they shot down a chance to actually do that. The thing that she's giving a speech about, they did not do in the Senate. And I don't remember her doing a whole round of appearances in the media about how that was utterly unacceptable. And there's a reason for that, because she believes that life begins at fertilization. For political purposes, she is pretending to support IVF, but it fundamentally goes against her actual ideology. And finally, as Maz pointed out, most of that speech was demonizing about the border. And many, many Republicans have been utterly hypocritical about the border, claiming it's an invasion and a crisis on the one hand, while helping to kill it on the other hand. But she is arguably worse than most of them, because she had a direct hand in writing the bill, thinking this is great, we're gonna do this, it's a crisis down there. Oh, Donald Trump doesn't want this? Well, screw the whole thing. But I'm still gonna talk about the border as if I think it's some sort of big deal, not a deal we need to do anything about for the next year or so. So look, was she emotional and weird and strange and breathy and it's ASMR? Yes, 100%. But she is just as bad as all the rest of them on policy, arguably worse than some. Final thoughts?
No, I will just say that I think on the border bill, I am not in favor of what I think is ultimately a right-wing bill. And as you pointed out, sponsored and supported by Republicans itself. Because ultimately, the way to actually protect people from being trafficked is to have border policies that put human beings first and not enforce and come down on them and treat them like criminals, which they are not, by and large, are not. Otherwise, you will inevitably lead to coyote trafficking, human trafficking, and on and on and on, which actually happens within this country as well. So that's the last point I want to put on. But I think that's really important to remember. She helped write this bill.
Yeah, and I'll piggyback on that by saying, as much as we laugh and have fun with her performance, these people make you laugh because they're so ridiculous, but they're also dangerous. It's the same thing with a lot of Trump stuff. You watch him and he's mumbling stuff up and jumbling stuff up. They're actually dangerous people who are supported by a far right wing agenda that wants to take away women's rights, LGBTQ rights, people of color's rights, immigrant rights. They're really, I mean, if they do want a Handmaid's Tale. And so beyond laughing at them, we really got to wake up and fight them in the elections. We got to fight them in the courts and make sure that our rights are not taken away.
Well, look, I know we're getting on, but I want to talk about one other topic really quick. I'm gonna lay this out a little bit, get your reactions. We've been focusing mostly on Katie Britt because, of course, Cenk Uygur did his response to the State of the Union last night. But there's one section we need to give you an update on, starting with this.
We have two ways to go. Republicans can cut Social Security and give more tax breaks to the wealthy. That's the proposal. You guys don't want another $2 trillion tax cut? I kind of thought that's what your plan was. Well, that's good to hear. You're not going to cut another $2 trillion for the super wealth. That's good to hear.
I love Mike Johnson in the background shaking his head. Oh, look at Joe going on. Yeah, we like giving tax cuts to the uber wealthy only because we did it under Reagan and George W. Bush and also Donald Trump, but we're totally going to do it if he gets back in office. They're so utterly fake. But the message was heard loud and clear. Joe Biden was saying we should have the rich pay their fair share. And the rich, it turns out, were listening and they didn't like that section. And we're going to give you their responses. Jeff Green is a real estate billionaire who said, I don't agree with the idea of just singling out people because of how much they have or don't have. Well, in this case, he's targeting the people who have a lot, literally billions of dollars. You're a billionaire. You have a lot. That's what he's singling out. That guy has previously talked about how there's this jealousy towards the uber wealthy. So I guess we're expecting them to pay more than 3 or 4% of taxes in a year because we're jealous of them. He says the progressive income tax, I understand, though he argued that tax rates have grown out of control. You have to leave incentives for people who are the ones who are going to create the jobs for all those people trying to climb the ladder. Evidently, the incentive to become and stay a billionaire is not enough for this guy. He's got higher aspirations than billions of dollars. And he also says, you know, it's really difficult to even say how much money some of us have. People speculate about my net worth. I don't think I can tell you what my net worth is. I have a bunch of assets that are artwork and real estate. I mean, do I know every day what it's worth? And I would argue that if you're gonna tell us that we should not be thinking hard about possibly taxing you more, your rebuttal should not be, I don't even know how rich I am, man. I got all these paintings and I honestly forgot I had a castle. You know, I just don't get out there more than once a decade. I think you could probably bear the taxes. Anyway, he offered alternative solutions. So he's not just criticizing Joe Biden, he has an alternate plan. So don't tax. He says you could raise the age of Social Security eligibility. My kids who are 10, 12, 14, you could tell them, you know what? When you retire, you're gonna get money at 70, not 65. Do you think they're gonna care? Maybe not. Their dad's a billionaire, you psychopath. I'm not worried about them, I'm worried about regular people. And his response to, hey, maybe you could pay more than 8% income taxes is, no, make the poors grind it out for another half decade. That's a better solution to me, a billionaire. Your concern is noted. We have this grocery billionaire who says, I think it sounds like President Biden doesn't want a capitalist government. He wants a government for socialism, and socialism doesn't work. Ask the people in Russia, ask the people in Cuba, ask the people in Venezuela. I mean, arguably, I heard from Tucker Carlson that the people in Russia love it, that they're killing it. Did you know how good the bread is there? Anyway, he goes on to say, you're trying to take away the incentives for people to work hard. He is literally a billionaire. And then billionaire investor Leon Cooperman, who I know Anna Kasparian will definitely appreciate this, said that Biden's proposals amount to a version of tax and spend, where they don't tackle the real problem. The real problem is excess spending. Bearing in mind, of course, that government spending benefits people who don't already have billions of dollars. Weird that the billionaire thinks that's the problem. Maz, I wanna go to you first. What do you think about the billionaire tears?
Well, their reactions are proof that trickle-down economics does not work. Because the idea of trickle-down economics was they make money and then everybody else makes money. The problem is when these billionaires make money, they don't give the money to everybody else. They go and buy a $500 million yacht and they buy private islands. That's what they do. And that's why these guys are crying these alligator tears. And it's just, it's ridiculous, really. I mean, I heard Elizabeth Warren one time say that we're asking these people to pay the taxes because they're making their fortunes using this system that we have created. By the way, all these people who go, oh, you want to be a socialist, you want to be a socialist. I always remind them, we are in the ultimate capitalist society and it's not ever going to change. And if you want proof, I always go back to the pandemic and how the pandemic, when the lockdowns happened, the government didn't lock us down. You know who locked us down? The NBA. If you remember, it was one of the players, Rudy Gobert. He had COVID, and then they started this game, and then all of a sudden they realized that there was going to be a spread, and they go, we're closing down the game. Once they saw that that game is being closed down, all of a sudden government caught up and was like, oh, we got to shut this down. So ultimately, we live in a capitalistic society. Once again, even like when you talk about like Donald Trump and all the abuses he was doing on Twitter, and it was getting crazier and crazier leading up to January 6th. And we tried in a dictatorial system, you probably would have shut him off earlier. No, it was actually Twitter and the private companies kicking him off. We live in a capitalistic society. Mm-hmm. You cannot ignore that or deny that. And these people should pay more taxes because they get away with it. Somebody was once talking about it because I didn't understand how it worked. Real quick, last point. Jeff Bezos, I was listening to the Daily podcast. They were talking about Jeff Bezos was giving himself an $80,000 salary and he was paying taxes on that. And I'm going, that is ridiculous. And these guys just have these loopholes and they get through it. They're making money in this system, in our system. So they should pay their fair share of taxes.
Well, and I think to your point, Ma, specifically on it's a capitalist society, I think a lot of people would argue that actually, no, they're not playing fairly by capitalistic rules, right? They head up monopolies like Bezos. They swallow up other companies. They are allowed to merge time and time again with no stops. I mean, the Biden administration has actually successfully put a stop to a couple of these mergers. But increasingly, they don't play by the rules of capitalism that the rest of us have to play by, right? The rest of us who can barely afford our rent each month and who, for whom the extra money that maybe we got under COVID, for example, for food stamps, so to speak, the $15 a month, which if you've been following this, allowed people to have like chicken for the first time in months, that all went away thanks to Republicans. So look, I'm glad that Biden is calling them out on this. Obviously, they are Republicans truly are just siphons and funnels to get money to go up and up. And to Maz's point, they don't just buy islands and cars, they buy Supreme Court justices. That's how it works now. The real thing, though, is I wish that Biden would go harder on them about this. The fact that they didn't vote, not a single one of them voted for the American Rescue Plan, right? He doesn't tout that, in part because he's allowed a lot of those things like the child tax credit to lapse. But I wish he went even harder on just how much they are gatekeepers of plutocrats and billionaires like they hope to be one day.
100%.
Well, he did mention a couple of times, by the way, he did mention, it was kind of funny to watch Joe because he's a little older, but he was still sharp. He did mention a couple of times about, oh, you guys are taking credit for the, the infrastructure bill. He goes, he made fun of them for that. So, I mean, you're right. You do got to keep pushing and pushing and pointing out that these guys vote against these things. And then if it works to their benefit, they try to take credit for it, which is ridiculous.
Right.
100%. We're going to take a short break, but lots more to get to after this. Welcome back, one and all. Lots more to discuss, including what are the big domestic political news stories of the day, starting with this.
In a world where qualifications are often measured by titles and years of experience, we are reminded of a powerful truth. God does not call the qualified, he qualifies the called. Laura Trump is the embodiment of this truth.
Burn? I think Laura Trump just got roasted, but look, it's her big day, okay? She has now been elected the co-chair of the Republican National Committee. That means that Trump has more influence over the RNC, and she has now the biggest political position that she's ever had. And she got it not based off of qualifications. That's not me saying that. That's the woman announcing the news who said that, but because she married Eric Trump. Okay, and I know a lot of people would like poo-poo that and say, well, what kind of qualification is that? She paid her dues. She has had to spend many, many hours in the same room as Eric Trump. Does she not deserve this after all that work, all that service? But anyway, it's not her only experience. She's not only his wife, she's a mother of two, a fitness fiend, says the Wall Street Journal, a Tom Petty cover vocalist, a children's book author, and a former Inside Edition producer. So why should she not be in charge of the Republican National Committee and in charge of hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars? In any event, I'm curious what the panel thinks about her qualifications, but also what she clearly has been put on this in this position to do. And in case it's not clear going in, here she is before she got the position telling us what she plans to do.
We need to make sure that every penny of every dollar donated to the RNC is going to Donald Trump's campaign.
What I can assure you is if I am there, I will make sure that every single penny donated to the RNC goes to electing Donald Trump. And again, extending our lead in the House and taking back the Senate. Here's what I can tell you. The RNC needs to be the leanest, most lethal political fighting machine we've ever seen in American history. That is the goal over the next 9.5 months. If I am elected to this position, I can assure you there will not be any more $70,000 or whatever exorbitant amount of money it was spent on flowers. Every single penny will go to the number one and the only job of the RNC. That is electing Donald J. Trump as president of the United States and saving this country.
So it is pretty clear what she wants to do and why they would put her on that position, considering that she has no relevant experience whatsoever. You don't need a whole lot of experience to say, we're taking all of this money and we're giving it to Trump, my literal family member. And at times like this, I'm thinking what I imagine many of you are thinking. Joe Biden really did give too much to Hunter Biden. That family is too embroiled in politics and everything as Trump takes over the entire Republican Party apparatus. So look, I'm not even mad about it though. I'm joking about Laura Trump, but if they want to take all of that money that candidates across the country on the Republican side desperately need to get elected, and they want to just throw it into a massive hole of his legal obligations and fines, I think that's fine. She taking that position and promising to give all the money to Trump, something I think that she will make good on, certainly imperils their chances of holding on to the House and their chances of taking over the Senate. And as someone who doesn't want them in power, I really don't mind. Francesca, what do you think?
You said everything, John. This is what I don't want to do the show with you anymore.
I apologize.
Because you just said all the good stuff, but you're exactly right. The nepotism charges for Hunter Biden. Oh, look, now Lara Trump, the daughter-in-law, is in charge of the RNC. Do you guys care about democracy? No, we don't. We just care about King Trump winning again and again and again. All of the money that they're going to need to, yes, to maintain the House, to gain any kind of lead, to win the Senate, I guess. No, all of that's gone. It's completely gone. And if they don't win in November, like, what happens? Does Lara Trump stay on because of her incredible? I mean, she can really do free falling when she gets like a couple of beers in her and she just, and I'm free. No, man, you're going to be in free fall is what you're going to be in if he doesn't win in November. And even if he does, like, I don't know, it's just mind boggling to me. But good luck. The problem, and I think the interesting thing is, what about all the donors to Nikki Haley, folks like the Koch brothers, the buttoned up conservatives? You know, they want their tax breaks, but they want to do it, you know, without all the overt racism. Is it going to be more difficult for the RNC to fundraise now that Lara Trump is in charge?
Yeah, and just to piggyback on your free falling reference, how about I won't back down? I think that a lot of these Republicans, they hear these types of songs, you know, I won't back down. I'm so tough. I'm not going to back down. And then they start using it or singing it or whatever until the estate of Tom Petty hears about it and sends him a cease and desist. And he's like, stop using my songs. This poor guy supports nothing you're doing. Please back down. We don't want you to not sing his songs. And this is continuously happening, by the way. That pretty soon, like if it gets out that she was this Tom Petty vocalist, I'm sure the estate's gonna do something and she'll have to turn to one of these, you know, far right wing, kid. She'll start singing kid rock music. So that's one thing she's gonna end up doing, number one. Number two, the introduction was brilliant. I mean, the lady said, I forget the exact words. She goes, God does not choose the qualified, but qualified.
The Chosen. Oh, God.
The Chosen. Listen, I'm a comedian. If I were about to go up on stage and the MC was would be like, this guy coming to the stage, he's not funny, but sometimes comedy chooses people. And we got no one else. So he's here to take your money. Bring him on. I'd be like, really? Like, I'd be offended. So it was the worst intro. And thirdly,
God chose him to make you laugh, though.
God chose him to make you laugh. Don't listen to his jokes. These jokes don't have punchlines. But if you just listen to God, it'll tickle you.
If you don't laugh, you're not a pious person, effectively.
Yeah. And at this point, by the way, I think the word grifter should be a synonym to the word Trump. As a matter of fact, I think from now on, you know how Trump gives nicknames? We should just name them all like Laura Grifter, Donald Grifter, Ivanka Grifter. Just start using the last name Grifter for them and really get the point across that these people are the biggest grifters. I've seen so many videos of Trump supporters at Trump rallies going, you know what I love about him? He doesn't need the money. He's already got money. He's rich. And I go, then why is he sending you a letter asking you for money? If you really didn't need the money, he'd be like, look, I'm a billionaire. I got this. Don't worry about it. Yep. You keep your money. Pay for your children to eat. Don't worry about it. Meanwhile, here's a check. I'm going to write you a check. He doesn't need the money. Not only does he need it, he needs the money so badly, he's putting his daughter-in-law in charge of asking you for money while he's asking you for money from another one. He's asking for money in several different... Yep. He is the ultimate spam call. Donald Trump, if you get a phone call and it says potential spam, that's Donald Trump and his family calling you. Don't answer.
Yeah, and if you're a conservative, like, you know that he could just spend a billion of his own dollars, fully fund his own presidential campaign, freeing up all that money for good MAGA weirdos all over the country to win. And at the end, he would still be a billionaire. But he's not gonna do that. He's gonna take all your money, he's gonna soak it up from these other candidates, and they aren't gonna have it, and they're not gonna get elected. And for some reason, you think that he's a hero for that reason. But before we move on, I do wanna remind you, in terms of, like, again, we keep coming back to, like, did you know Hunter Biden got a job because he's related to Joe Biden? Yeah, that's nepotism, and I don't like it. Did you know that Laura Trump got a job with Parscale for Trump's reelection campaign in 2020, and she was paid $180,000 a year as a political consultant? That's just stupid money. That's just free money. She doesn't have qualifications. In 2021, she was rumored that when Richard Burr left office, she would run for Senate.
I remember that.
She was an Inside Edition producer. That's good. I love producers. That's good. Does that necessarily qualify? I mean, obviously, she's going to run for Senate, but that's not suspicious. Hunter Biden, you know, selling a painting or something. Clearly nepotism, and I think Congress should investigate. They're ridiculous.
This goes back real quickly, John. This goes back to our first segment where we were talking about Katie Britt and how it's funny how she was. And in this case, Laura Trump being now one of the people in charge of the RNC, it's funny. But after you're done laughing, you got to step back and look at the actual crimes that are happening. Look at the actual policies that they're trying to pass and realize that you're being taken and wake up and fight.
100%. Okay, I think we're getting a little bit on. I think we should take our second break. When we come back, we're gonna give you a little update on some of Donald Trump's legal travails, and then see if we can do the story about some attempted activism in Israel coming up after this. Welcome back, one and all, to what remains of the first hour of The Young Turks. Lots more to come coming up in the second hour, but for now we have this. Donald Trump is not having the best day in court, or courts perhaps, because of course every week there's multiple trials that are moving forward, and we want to give you updates on a few of them. So the first has to do with the classified documents case. You forgot about that one, didn't you? Well, it's still proceeding, and it may even go to trial, although it's not guaranteed at this point. Eileen Cannon, the judge overseeing the case, is currently deciding whether that trial should begin in the summer or if it should wait until potentially after the presidential election, in which case Donald Trump could win office and then just snap his fingers and the case is gone. But the special counsel is trying to make sure that that doesn't happen. And one of the ways that he's doing that is by stressing that Donald Trump's claim that he had absolute immunity to steal hundreds of classified documents is on its face ridiculous, and it's clearly being put forward as a means to delay the trial. He says it is so wholly without merit that it's difficult to understand it except as part of a strategic effort for delay, hoping that she will accept that and move forward expeditiously. Smith's office asked Judge Eileen Cannon to certify his new immunity claim as frivolous, which would foreclose the former president's avenue for an immediate appeal that would delay the trial. An immunity claim is one of the few issues that, if appealed, could derail a trial. And look, it is ridiculous on its face, but a lot of judges, including the Supreme Court recently, have been pretending that there might be merit to it. And we do have to bear in mind in this case that it's Eileen Cannon. She has shown a willingness to go above and beyond any sort of ethical obligations or guidelines in trying to manipulate this case to benefit Donald Trump. So we'll see how that goes. We know that the Supreme Court is going to be taking up the immunity claim on a separate trial, the January 6th trial, on April 25th. So we still have more than a month to wait for that. But Francesca, starting with you, what do you think about this update?
I mean, yes, I had forgotten about it. But again, this is one of the more egregious and stupid of the crimes that Donald Trump has committed. And I realize that is, you know, it's a high bar there. There's a lot of dumb ones, but this is the dumbest. This was like the, I want this for show and tell to my friends slash spies trying to get in a word with me at Mar-a-Lago, buying my loyalty as they sip down impossibly disgusting cocktails. So, and watch me cheat at golf. Like, you, and the other thing is like, you know, the, I think that they go on and on about Nada, right? Like Donald Trump's like right hand guy was this guy named Walt Nada, and Nada's like very much in deep doo doo over this. So why shouldn't Trump be? Like, it is the most, throwing this guy under the bus when he did just carried out the wishes of the former president. But again, we're going to see how the Supreme Court handles the immunity case when it comes to this president. And I think they, I don't know, John, I mean, Maz, what do you guys think? Like, I think they will not allow him to have presidential immunity, but it will succeed, as we saw, in punting the rest of these cases farther and farther down the line. So ultimately, after November, it's not going to matter.
Yeah, these guys, listen, his defense team is using the strategy that some of us use when we get the letter to go be in, on a jury. If you delay it long enough, maybe it'll go away. Mm-hmm. And so they've been doing that with everything. This immunity case is just the fact that he wasn't even president when this happened. The classified documents happened after he was president. And then he admits his own guilt by saying, well, I actually declassified it before I took it with me. It's all just, it's just a complete mess. And there should be, there shouldn't even be a question. It's so crazy. It's so obvious. It's like, and then the false equivalency that his supporters do. They go, well, Biden had classified documents. Mike Pence had classified documents. Yeah, but when they were asked to return them, they returned them. They did not obstruct justice. It's like somebody is going to, you know, arrest some people with drugs. And one person goes, look, I got it. Here you go. This is how it came about. And that person might end up getting more leniency versus the guy who runs and starts shooting to try and then hides it in his bathroom. That guy's gonna get taken down. And then they keep going and they go, oh, this is the politicization of the Department of Justice. No, your guy would not be getting pursued if he hadn't committed any crimes. This is, it just doesn't, it's never happened. There hasn't been any president ever in the history of the United States that's committed so many crimes. And then he has the gall to turn around and go, why are you investigating me? Because you're a criminal. You're a crook. You are worse than Nixon. And so I'm happy Smith is the prosecutor is going after him. And I hope they keep going. And you're right. We've got the uphill battle. This guy is the luckiest dude in the world. He's got Eileen Cannon, who is a hack over there. Who's trying to support him and save him. He's very much the roadrunner, and I feel like we're Wile E. Coyote. But you know, it's time Wile E. finally caught that roadrunner. Maybe it'll happen.
I like it. I wasn't sure exactly where you were going with that metaphor, but I liked it in the end. 100%. The weirdest thing about all of this is not that he broke the law, it's that he seemingly spent every moment breaking a variety of laws. Like, how did you commit so many crimes? A week ago, when I was reminded of the hush money trial, I thought I had forgotten that one. Like, I didn't even, there's so many floating out there. How did you do all this? And look, some of it, he's already lost. Remember, of course, a jury found that he had sexually abused E. Jean Carroll, which bothers literally zero MAGA people. They don't care that he raped this woman and then spent decades lying about it. Super weird, but he did owe quite a lot as a result of that. And he has put forward the actual bond for the $91.6 million. It'll end up costing him more. That's how bonds work. He's gonna have to pay interest and all that, a fee to the bonding company. But it was backed by the Chubb company, an insurance giant who chose to name itself that. In any event, if he loses the appeal, he's gonna have to make good on the money that they backed. Theoretically though, if the appeal works the way that he thinks it might, or that Alina Haba thinks it might, then maybe he'll end up owing less or maybe nothing. And that's the $91.6 million, the nearly a half billion dollars that he owes in the New York civil fraud case. That's due in a little bit less than 3 weeks. So it remains to be seen if he'll be able to get that one backed. But he did for the smaller one. Super fast reaction, starting with you, Francesca.
I mean, Lara Trump is now a co-chair, so he's gonna be able to pay that money back. And you know, good for Chubb, whose name I'm now somehow Googling. I think it should be more like Chud. That's more like on the nose, you know, MAGA Chud. But yeah, ugh, he coughed it up. That's all I have to say. They eventually coughed it up, and they will probably have to cough up more.
Yeah.
He's gonna be selling a lot of shoes, John. He's gotta sell a lot of shoes. But these guys, again, I think let's work on Donald Grifter. I just want people to use that, because he's the biggest grifter. And mm-hmm. and I hope that every strategy that they have in court backfires. I really do. I've never had so much like animosity for a human being in my life. You know, I was talking to somebody today about, like, you know, we all have like close people that we love. And then, you know people that you love that end up getting sick, and you're like, my God, that person is sick, and they're not in a good state, and like they might pass away. And I go, I would never wish anybody, because then meanwhile you have a lot of bad people who keep living. And I go, I would never wish anybody dies. But I go, but I got a list, and I don't want to go any further. I don't like the karma of it all. But he's just the worst human being in the world.
But that's the happiest day of the last 5 years of my life was when Donald Trump had COVID and got that. Yes.
Oh, what
and
a great
I, yes,
day.
I realized that my daughter was born in the last 5 years. I stand by what I said.
She's still top five.
There
I
you
think.
Go.
Anyway, hopefully Karina will never see this video someday. In any event, we are running low on time, and I want to make sure that we get to this last story. So we're going to cover it at least in an abbreviated fashion. Whenever we're ready, why don't we roll this footage?
We are 10 minutes from the borders with Gaza. We have a truck full of food for the people starving in Gaza. The police and the army won't let us get in. So we are staying here. We will keep holding on until they will let us in, because there is no reason to let people starve to death in Gaza. This does not benefit any of us, not the people living in Gaza and not the people living in Israel. And we demand a ceasefire agreement that will bring back hostages and stop the killing of innocent people in Gaza.
A strong message, and powerfully delivered there by an activist named Rula Daoud, who's a Palestinian woman, also a citizen of Israel, who, along with a number of other Israeli activists, put together a convoy of dozens of vehicles, including a 7-ton truck that they packed with aid in the form of food and medicine. And then they brought it near the border with Gaza. They wanted to get it in because, as she says, there's no reason for people to starve. But many, many people are in the process of starving right now, through no small part from the fact that aid that has been made available just can't get in there. It's being stopped at the border, it's being disrupted. So they tried to fix that situation, and of course they were stopped. Now, they knew in advance that they were extremely unlikely to be able to bring the aid in, but they wanted to do this as sort of a symbolic act to bring to light the fact that there are people, including activists in Israel, that do not want this suffering to continue. They said they wanted to highlight a different voice and show there are people in our society who feel what is happening in Gaza is unacceptable. And so you could see there, I mean, look, she mentioned getting the hostages back. They don't want anyone on either side of this conflict to die, either through violence or through the absolute degradation of the infrastructure in Gaza in terms of access to water, to food, to medical supplies, that is going to result in an incredible amount of suffering and potentially in the long term, even more deaths than have been accrued through the actual direct violence of the assault on Gaza by the IDF. Maybe we can get to a little bit more, but Francesca, I wanted to start with you. What are your thoughts about this, this symbolic act, this attempt to help?
I mean, I think it is incredibly brave, and I think important, especially in Israel, especially at a time, you know, in following such a heinous attack, when they lose their jobs if they speak out in support of Palestinian human rights. But I also think it speaks to the incredible ineptitude, not just of the Israeli government, but the United States government. Today we saw airdrops from U.S. planes with parachutes on, sort of this last ditch attempt to get any food to the people of Gaza. Some of those parachutes failed to open, and those aid packages actually wound up killing two Palestinians, I believe, in northeast Gaza. Yes. Like, so this is the state that we are in, and it is a terrible failure, a moral failure, a political failure, you know, between the United States and Israel. The one actor that could just open up the borders to allow the trucks that are there with food rotting day by day. Last thing I'll say is, look, when this entire war, although now genocide, began, I thought, you know, the estimates were like, look, we're looking at 10 to 30,000 dead. And in my, I felt a gut punch. No way. We can't allow that to happen. 30,000 and counting, 25,000 of them women and children, by the US's own admission, 25,000 women and children. But then the other thing that was said was the death based on starvation coming out of this will be worse. So imagine 30,000. We're hearing deaths every single day from mostly children, because they need the most nutrients and their lives are the most fragile, who are dying.
Yeah.
You're gonna be seeing more than 30,000 people starving to death unless we take immediate action, and that starts by opening up these borders.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking, and it's crazy, because I think that the Palestinians have become so dehumanized in the eyes of some. And of course, you can also say, when I talk to some of my Jewish friends, they go, well, they dehumanized us. War dehumanizes. And we need to get past that and realize that these two people need to coexist there. And it's crazy, because when you say, oh, I'm calling for, you know, I support ceasefire, a lot of people go, well, what about bringing back the hostages? You go, well, that's part of the idea. The only time the hostages came back was when there was a ceasefire.
Yeah. Yes.
So let's get that ceasefire. Let's get those hostages back, and let's come up with a political solution. This is a failure, as Francesca was saying, not just of Israel and the United States, but of the whole world. We've ignored this problem. We've let it continue on, and we thought, oh, it'll just go away. We'll just ignore it. You can't. There's other countries and other peoples that are living side by side and have learned to coexist. I know there's a deep history. I know that there's both sides are saying you did this. The other side says you did that. We are where we are. There's millions of Palestinians. There's millions of Israelis. We need to come up with a solution. And as Francesca said, the first thing that needs to happen is the United States has the power to tell Israel, stop. Just stop, ceasefire. None of this like wishy-washy, like maybe we should, you know, we're kind of calling for a ceasefire, kind of maybe, can you please? No, stop it. We've given you all the, I mean, the fact that, like, on the one hand, we're giving them weapons, on the other hand, we're trying to throw in.
Exactly.
Relief. It's just silly. It's like relief, you know, humanitarian relief, you know, so
stop,
it's really
sending
heartbreaking.
Them weapons. That's stop what it sending, is.
Yeah. And the fact is, listen, it's a, you got to see your enemy as a human being. These are human beings. And I understand that October 7th was a horrible and atrocious day. But again, unfortunately, there's no weapon that can just kill the masterminds of October 7th and the Hamas leadership, and then not kill all these innocent people. And so,
100%.
These people that were doing this are brave. And I hope that we continue to push, but ultimately it falls on the Biden administration to step up and really start saying and doing serious stuff.
Well, the organization is standing together. They have a website if you want to learn more about what they're trying to accomplish. The final thing that I'm going to say about this is when we talked about dehumanization, I noticed something during the State of the Union yesterday. You might have noticed the Republicans were not quick to clap or to stand up. That's the way that it works. It's sort of a norm of these things. But there were a few instances in which Mike Johnson, who was visible on camera the entire time, did actually stand up and clap. And I noticed one. See, Joe Biden transitioned to talking about the situation in Gaza. And he talked about the tragedy of October 7th and how it was unacceptable that so many had died and that we have to get the hostages back. And Mike Johnson stood up and clapped. And he should. The hostages should be returned. It's unacceptable what happened on October 7th. And then Joe Biden talked about the more than 30,000 that have died since in Gaza and how that needs to stop. He didn't stand.
No.
He didn't clap because he didn't care. He didn't care if 30,000 die. He doesn't care if it's 10,000 children, 3,000 one-year-olds that died. He doesn't care if twice as many die in the end. He doesn't care if five times as many starve or die needlessly of diseases that could have been treated if their medical institutions were still standing. He didn't care and he didn't think he needed to even pretend to care when he was on camera. And I don't know what to say about that. It's just socially acceptable to care about the lives of some people and not about the lives of others. We should be better than that, but thus far we're not. Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for the first hour. There's a lot more to come in the second hour. Francesca, as always, thank you so much. It's great to have you
here. Thank you. Before I go, come see me in Sacramento, March 17th, Sunday at 7 p.m. That's next Sunday, St. Patrick's Day. I'll be with Matt Lieb, myself, FrancescaFiorentini.com for tickets.
Thank you. And Maz, as always, pleasure to have you here. Thank you.
And I'm in Phoenix this weekend. I'm coming to Dallas. I'm coming to Detroit. Go to MazJobrani.com. Come see me live, and let's laugh a little. And you know, we all need a little release.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. I will be in LA this weekend with my family. Leave me alone. I'll see you on Monday. Bye, everyone.